So, good morning, everyone, and welcome to those who are newly arrived. This morning, I'll offer a few more reflections on the practice of metta. So cultivating this kindness, friendliness, goodwill, it can feel like it's a lot of work. So we come and we orient, and some might be doing phrases, and some might be just cultivating this sense of goodness and warmth in each moment. And we hear all about the practice and how we're growing this metta mind. And so we're putting effort in. It takes effort and intention. And at the same time, we might feel in these moments of simple presence, walking, sitting, standing, just a sense of this very natural, just a quiet kind of warmth. It's already here, feels like it's who we are. And we hear about this goodness that's in us, these heart qualities, and it can feel like it's effortless, it's just innate. And so this balance that we're always finding of really putting our wholehearted effort into this cultivation, inclining the mind. And then we also can hear or feel into this very natural and relaxed effortlessness. We're just relaxing into who we already are. And our beloved lineage holder, teacher, friend, Joseph Goldstein, he says this. He says, on the relative level, love and compassion are states that we cultivate. And on the ultimate level, they're the responsive nature of the mind itself. And we get glimpses of this as we are moment by moment bringing our whole self, our whole heart to this practice, whatever practice we're doing. We feel these glimpses when the separation dissolves and there's just this being with, this interbeing. This deep kind of intimacy. And so through our devotion, our diligence, our love of the practice, our wholehearted effort, we can drop into this sense of just being metta, already here, already here. Sometimes we feel as if the whole world is made of metta. And then there's other times when we really don't feel that way at all. So just to offer another story from my cabin retreat. I've been in retreat for quite a while. In total, in the last couple years, I was up in the cabin for 18 months. And I was in a whole curriculum, and there was a whole plan, and planning to end in June of last year. And so just about a year ago in February, my auntie, who I love, who's been part of my life my whole life, very close, she texted me and said, I'm having a hip replacement. And she asked me if I would come and accompany her in the few days after her surgery, which was scheduled for May. And I didn't want to do it, honestly. I had been in retreat, I was in a rhythm and a flow, and I wanted to continue up in the cabin to fully finish my retreat in June. And it really tugged on my heart because that immediate response was, no, I don't want to go. So I sat with it, I felt this sense of obligation. And I thought, you know, she's 70 years old. I'm her only niece. And so I decided I would do it, even with this tug in my heart, wanting to stay, but also this sense of, I can go down the hill for 3 days and then come right back up into retreat. And what I decided when I told her I would go, I said to myself, okay, this is my practice of metta. I've been sitting up here on my cushion cultivating it. How would it be to go down into town, drive down into the valley, about a 45-minute drive, spend these 3 days, and see it as a little mini 3-day metta retreat in the valley with my auntie? And so I did. I did the phrases as I was driving down the hill, and all the while I did not feel metta. I felt obligated, a kind of burden. I felt nervous coming out of retreat. But as I did these phrases, and I really thought, okay, she loves jigsaw puzzles, and she loves flowers, and she loves banana bread. And so I deliberately, through my practice, brought these. And I practiced through those 3 days, and honestly, there were many moments of impatience and some resistance and some longing for the cabin. And it was a lot to help her move around and get her medication right. But on the last day, the third day, we were doing a puzzle together and laughing, and I saw her enjoying herself, and I saw all of my efforts, my mixed sense of resistance and also willingness and interest in the practice and care for her. And in that moment, I really saw, oh, that I can do this everywhere. And even when I don't quite feel it, this is the metta practice. This is it. It's been here all along. And there's nowhere else I would rather be than right here with my auntie doing this puzzle. So in metta, it's much more the intention than the feeling. And even though we don't always feel this innate goodness, this sense of trust and friendliness, when we apply our intention, it's already here. And all of the resistance and the fear and the judgment, the unworthiness, we know this is all part, it's all held within the much bigger intention of metta. Metta is bigger, it can hold all of it, just like awareness. So those who are doing awareness or mindfulness practice, this also is metta, a very natural connection, response, presencing. And those who are doing metta, this line in the sutta says whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. We remember again and again, this is mindfulness. Sati brings us back to metta. And so over time, we can have this sense that metta is mindfulness and mindfulness is metta. Saira Upandita says you're 100% responsible for your experience. And sometimes when I'm in a grumpy mood or struggling, I don't like to hear that. It's like, I don't want to take responsibility for this mind state. But I think what he's pointing to is a very deep kind of agency that we have. That when we recognize our experience is completely dependent on our perception of things, our perception of ourselves, of the world. And so when we keep putting these metta glasses on, we keep cultivating the metta mind, we can see that it's this superpower, it's this deep kind of personal agency and power. We can choose each moment how we want to be, how we want to hold ourselves in the world. And this is how, over time, with this effortless effort, we start to realize the freedom that's here for us, that's waiting. Letting this quiet love just liberate and liberate and liberate. And so I'll finish just with this beautiful poem we heard a couple nights ago, because it feels like such a poem of metta. St. Francis and the Sow. The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness. To put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely. Until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. As St. Francis put his hand on the creased forehead of the sow and told her in words and in touch, blessings of earth on the sow. And the sow began remembering all down her thick length, from the earthen snout all the way through the fodder and slops, to the spiritual curl of the tail, from the hard spininess spiked out from the spine, down to the great broken heart, to the sheer blue milken dreaminess spurting and shuddering from the 14 teats into the 14 mouths, sucking and blowing beneath them, the long, perfect loveliness of sow.